thought leader and influencer. This is Luba Mayegiso and the Africa Report.
Luba Mayegiso, how are you?
Howard, very well, thank you. Yourself?
Very, very good. Thank you. I've got Howard Saxteen and Zanati both in studio as well. Thanks for speaking to us on a Wednesday instead of a Thursday. But I wanted to have this conversation with Howard in studio. We want to look ahead at SONA, which is taking place, State of the Nation address, which is taking place tomorrow. I'm actually not even interested in watching it. And that's how I know that... that maybe Cyril Ramaphosa hasn't captured our imaginations.
Well, that's absolutely true, but it's sad at the same time, because I think when he was voted into power after taking over from the former president, there was a lot of excitement, a lot of expectation. You know, when I thought about it, to me it almost resembled when you see a concept car, something that looks great on paper with lots of promise and everything, but in reality it's not there. And I think for me the disappointment has been... he's just been almost overwhelmed by the position and been quite ineffective. And I really struggle to find one area where I can say I'm really impressed that he's excelled in this particular area. You know, when I look at most of the major things, state-owned entities, unemployment, you know, the list goes on. It's really quite a hard struggle to say he's really impressed in this particular area and you applaud him. It is a bit depressing.
Mm. And worse than that is we don't seem to have the, or I certainly don't feel like I've got the confidence to know that he's dealing with some of these issues. You know, we can like Trump or hate Trump, but he goes in and he deals with the stuff even if he's very, very unpopular. Unfortunately, we know that Cyril Ramaphosa doesn't lead a very united ANC, which could put him at risk. But I think my sense is that he's overplayed this very careful balance, the result being that we're just not getting enough done, not quickly enough, certainly.
You know, the interesting thing, though, for me was a couple of days ago when he took over the rotating chair with the AU, he chaired a session that was meant to last for 2 days and ended 9:30 in the evening, with him then facing the media and giving them an address, you know, a summary. That session went on until 3 o'clock in the morning. People couldn't agree. And it dragged on for hours and hours, and eventually he had to cancel the speech that he was supposed to give. And one insightful comment was made by a diplomat from Ghana who said he hopes that he will learn to take a much firmer position as chair in future. And I think for me that sums up, you know, his leadership style. And I think that comment's a bit hopeful, because part of the problems we have are because he has failed to take a firm position. So when you look at the state-owned entities, you know, when I thought about this before, it's almost like a comedy club. Can you think of another president where ministers have openly bickered and gone on media? You know, you take, for instance, SAA. Tito Mboweni says, well, close it and give it to Sim Shabalala to start a new airline. Mandashe says, go ahead, close it. It's not making a profit. You talk about cannabis, and Tito constantly baits and he says, legalize the thing.
It's arrest absurd.
Me.
It's true.
I mean, it's interesting. How does a minister do that?
How are your thoughts?
Well, we know Tito just loves to stir.
Look, I'm a huge fan, by the way, of Tito.
Yeah, but
not all of his recipes work for me. But it is bizarre that this guy's tweeting about marijuana.
Photographs of his wheat plant on his farm.
And then the tweets deteriorate thereafter, which makes me think that he was sampling all of his stock.
But you can see that Tito doesn't take the ANC very seriously. So he continuously baits the leadership. Just to irritate.
Right. But it is a problem.
But my point is that how can he do that? Because that's why I'm saying under any other president, you never had this. I mean, the more bizarre one was on the issue of the Reserve Bank. I mean, Tito gets up and he says, you know what? I understand our resolutions. I don't need lectures. I'm convinced that we adopted a wrong resolution. And then Ace turns around and says, I don't care who you are. You towed the party line. Now, all I'm just saying is that it's fine to have this difference of views, but I think under this presidency, you can't have your cabinet slugging it out in the public and giving different views. If you get up and you say, I'm the leader, we've made a decision as a party, I've articulated the position, you can't have ministers doing this. And that for me,
although
an ability.
To some extent, it's a reaction to the last president, because under Zuma there was almost a pathological need to present a united front. Nobody was allowed to talk outside of the closed doors, and as a result of that, there was deep distrust in the ANC, well founded. So it's almost like it's gone completely the other direction, but it's too much now.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. I think the question I'm asking myself is, do they respect the president? Because as much as you may have disagreed with Mandela, you certainly wouldn't do this, and he certainly wouldn't tolerate it. Same with the Thabo Mbeki. So there was certain unity. And I think as much as the Zuma administration put severe strain and stress, and it doesn't bode well for your leadership that you've got people who openly have different views. For instance, we take the ESCOM strategy. You know, one minister comes up and says, close it, and somebody comes out and says, we're starting a new generation company. There's just too much disunity. So at the highest level of government.
Luba, do you think the greatest struggle that our government has is relevancy to the people of South Africa? That ultimately people have lost so much faith, they no longer care. They don't think government is delivering to them, so they're just ignoring government.
Sadly, I think that's very true. And I think over time people have lost faith. And I think what happened was there was a honeymoon period where they'd lost faith in the Zuma administration. Ramaphosa came in and brought with them a new dawn, and there was a lot of hope as to what that would bring. And I think many people have then sadly felt that that has not come through. I mean, you look at unemployment, it's at a record high. We've had several investor conferences around the country, and nothing has come through. So I think a lot of people have just resigned themselves to the fact that this is our lot, and they've lost faith, sadly. But his approval ratings are still reasonably high. But I think
that survey bothered me a little bit, because there weren't a lot of details around how they received, how they reached those numbers, who they are, who they polled, what the questions were. So I'm a little suspicious of the survey that did show that. So Zanati, what's your thoughts?
You know what? I think with going back to people speaking out, especially people in government, I think it's like remnants from the previous leadership. I don't necessarily think that it's because Cyril Ramaphosa isn't firm enough, but I mean, you had people like Makosi Khoza, speaking out in the public, and I think that people just don't care. And I think it's from that, from Zuma's leadership. So people now are just like, and especially because now we got past the honeymoon, now we realize that actually, what has Cyril done?
You know, what's interesting to me is I think. Not I think, I'm pretty convinced that they're not the only party to have this problem. The EFF are desperately seeking relevance. The comments and the statements that Malema is coming out with proves to me that they're trying to find a cause, and they're trying to find someone to a reason to an validation for existing. I think they've got a problem. I think the DA is too also struggling with who they represent, who they are, and people, even their supporters, I think, aside from a core group, are saying, well, okay, we're going to watch this space and see, in fact, if you are relevant to us.
Howard, I agree with you completely, but the main distinction for me is that the EF is in the opposition benches. They are not ruling any municipality or government. So they can fall into disarray. But here with the ruling party, all they have to do is just be efficient. They don't need to convince us with any words. All they have to do is actually just get on with the program, sort out their SOEs.
In fact, quite the contrary. We reported earlier, who said that they need to root out corruption? Was it ACE?
Yeah, it was ACE.
And we just rolled ours. Enough. Yes. Stop saying it. we've heard it. We agree. There's no one you need to tell that needs convincing aside from maybe your own party. Just do it.
But it's not happening, Howard.
But it's not happening. Yeah.
So here's my question though, let's go back to the bickering issue. You see, for me, I look at the leadership and I say, some of the qualities, I mean, Cyril is a likable person, but the problem is is he leading the way that we expect him to? And hence, I come back to the issue of saying you can have that multitude of voices. But somewhere along the line, if you're a CEO or you're a president, you need to be able to make a decision. You need to be able to articulate that. And then people need to fall into line and not challenge you openly. And I think for me, that's the issue. I get the sense that he would have made a wonderful president, but at another time when we didn't face the issues that we face that need a decisive ability to act. And I think for me, there lies the issue. You know, we take SAA, for instance, now. The trade unions are going to court. And I ask myself when I say, does government have a strategy around SAA? I'm not hearing one. I'm looking for a strategy around ESCOM. You're not hearing it. And there's many other issues. I mean, we can talk about cater deployment. We can talk about dealing with so many things. I mean, it boggled the mind this morning when I listened to reports from the Zondo Commission about just the tender procedure, how fraught that has become in terms of, you know, here's a person sitting at SAA soliciting money from the company that's bidding for work. And she's sitting at the Zondo Commission saying, I did nothing wrong. I don't understand what the issue is. So there are just so many things that we need to fix. But I'm struggling to find one where I can say, you know what, we're actually dealing with this one.
It's almost
like the president sits back and says, let the legal system play out however long it takes and these things will be resolved. But there's going to be no decisive intervention from my part.
Is it maybe because he's a people pleaser that he's in him trying to balance, he's trying to please everyone?
Okay, what does he have to lose? You see, the question I ask myself is this: if I was somebody who was dead poor, who didn't have anything, who wanted to be president, and this defined me, yes. But you've got a person who's been very successful in business. So you're not in here for the money. So why on earth are you president? You know, this is a question I'm asking myself. Surely you want to leave a legacy. You want to make a difference because you're not here for the money. So now get on with it, you know, create that legacy, make the difference. And this is where I'm struggling, because there is no other motivation for him to become president other than he believes that he can bring some good on a national stage and do certain things, but he's not doing that. And the unity in the ANC, we all know it's not there, but you see, the sad part for me, if I look forward to tomorrow to SONA, 30 years since Mandela was released, we're going to be regaled with stories about Mandela and about Mandela's legacy. Mm-hmm. But Mandela's legacy does not fix SAA. It does not sort out Transnet, does not sort out SABC. But we're going to probably have quite a significant portion devoted to that. So we almost get a history lesson, but a history lesson about where the party has come from, about Mandela's struggle and his sacrifice, counts for nothing.
Yeah, it's absolutely right. It's time to look forward, which is absolutely critical. It is 8:46, Luba Mikey, so we're going to go to ads. We'll be back with you just after that.
Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Time is 8:47. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem 101.9 Chai FM. We're talking SONA. We're talking Cyril Ramaphosa. We're talking politics. I'd love to hear from you. 34519 or 061-895-1019. All right. Yes.
Luba, I want to kind of almost take what you're saying and put it in slightly different words. You know, they used to say that in fact, Winston Churchill was a brilliant wartime prime minister, but a terrible peacetime prime minister.
Absolutely.
He knew how to motivate people. He knew how to galvanize people around an issue, and he knew how to, in fact, attack an enemy. But during peacetime, he was useless. And I think the problem that we have in South Africa is we have a peacetime president at a time of war.
Interesting.
I think I'd agree with you, and that's why I said he would have made a great president at another moment in history where we didn't have problems with the economy. You know, I think Howard and I discussed this last week and said, you know, he would have probably come in quite well after Mandela during that time as a second president in democracy. Mm-hmm. And then as much as I think a lot of people didn't enjoy his positions on age, but you needed somebody with a character from Mbeki who was much more could lead more, not effectively, but was more, had more confidence in his own ability and could silence unnecessary voices. You know, if you take, for instance, Thabo Mbeki dealing with the trade unions, he certainly put them in their place. He would do what needed to be done. And this is what we require right now. But the challenge is you look around and you say, then who else, if not him? It's very difficult. The crazy thing I think I've found over the last couple of months is hearing people saying, maybe Nkosi Zana may not have been a bad call. You know, yes, she was aligned to the wrong camp, but what people would do is they would look at her tenure in health and in home affairs and says, you know, apart from AU, she was very capable and very competent, you know, to get through legislation on smoking, which people didn't want to look at. So she was quite effective in her position as a cabinet minister. I'm not talking of her allegiance to her ex-husband or Western of the AU. But the question is, then you ask yourself when you say, if it's not him, who then do you see? And who could step forward and fulfill that role?
Yeah, and so, we certainly don't seem to have many options.
Luba, I keep on hearing stories that there's going to be an attempt mid-year to oust him, which I don't believe.
But we are hearing it.
But people are continuously talking about that.
You know, there's a lot of talk about them, and I mean, predominantly, you know, people have felt that the ACE camp has never given up. And it goes back to what we've been saying the whole time, that the challenge with that is that it's a self-created problem, because when he took over from Zuma, he did not blow the opposition camp apart. He needed to have come in, asserted his authority, and said, I'm the leader, and this is where we shall go, and really lined up, you know, the culprits on the other side and taken those ministers out. But he left the Malusi Gigabas and the Matabiles and those characters in place. And the other camp kind of got emboldened and felt that they had a reason to live and they still exist. And so typically when you hear people talking, you'll hear, for instance, Minister Sisulu in Human Settlements. You know, if you look at the media reports, they'll say she's one person with aspirations. And certainly looking at the NGC and seeing what they can do to remove him. So there is that talk. It doesn't inspire a lot of confidence. Hence I think there was a report in not just the Mail and Guardian, you know, the Daily Maverick, where they were saying even the budget in Human Settlements has been kind of centralized, and she's building a war kitty to mount her campaign. So certainly, whilst he's still serving his first term, there's enough noise of other people who are vying for that spot and wanting to topple him, which is very worrying, because the figures that you're hearing do not inspire confidence at all. But again, it comes back to the issue that here you have a president in his first term and people are brazen enough to contradict him and to be almost actively plotting against him and his downfall. That's unprecedented, you know, and it is a huge embarrassment and a challenge.
I just want to go back to what Zanati said, because she said perhaps he's a people pleaser. When I see some of the comments that he makes publicly and how he flip-flops in his approach, I'm bringing it back, let's say, to the peace plan, his comments around it were appalling. Absolutely one-sided, limited, ignorant, and so heavily influenced clearly by an agenda. But then you find him in another environment and he presents something completely different. This is not somebody that you learn to trust if there isn't consistency. If there's consistency and we like some things and we don't like other things, and that is who he is and what he stands for, that's one thing. But flip-flopping is one of the most uninspiring traits in a leader.
I think sometimes you get a sense that he articulates the position that's put forward to him in a speech. I mean, you take the issue, for instance, when you got to the AU on Israel, and then quite often all the issue on Eskom and the load shedding. I sometimes ask myself when I say, did he write the speech? Did he really interrogate what was given to him, or was he really saying, okay, this is what I'm being asked to present to the media? That's what worries me. And so a lot of the flip-flopping, you know, I'm not quite sure where it comes from, because surely as a leader, you must have your own views. You know, I've never been a president, but I'm assuming that you have speech writers. But those speech writers can't have complete carte blanche to write what they want. You must give input and direction. And even if they give you a product, you have to review and say, look, make changes. That's where I struggle. Is where, you know, he does his own brand. Where does he come in and say, no, this is not the direction? Because surely your speech writers must know your policy direction and where you stand on issues. And so they can amplify on that. So, you know, why do we get such wildly different views and in many cases such uninformed positions that are just so vacant and no facts? That's what worries me. Yeah. Is how much time is he really spending on the speeches and saying to guys, this is my policy position.
So Luba,
therefore articulate this position.
Luba, if you were to guess the three big things that would come out of SONA that you would want us to know or grab onto, what would you predict them to be?
Look, if you were to give me a wish list, I would say one, I need clarity on state-owned enterprises because we're losing buckets, I mean billions through that, through corruption. And SAA, to me, to lose SAA would be very sad. But SABC has been struggling to pay salaries. We've got SAA, we've got Translux, we've got many. SOEs, I need to hear a clear plan. A plan that is actionable that will turn the situation around. And I think that includes Eskom. So I'll group it there. Then I think I would need to hear something around job creation. Unemployment is at a record high and it's not coming down. I mean, it's the worst it's been since 2008, since Begi stepped down. And I think we need to address that because crime and many other things and the general feeling of despondency stem from that. And I think, you know, those two, for me, if we can tackle those, and then the bloated civil service, and I think we need to deal with that. And, you know, he mentioned he would do it, and again, it was half-hearted. Certainly, the cabinet we have can be trimmed down, the pomp and ceremony, and I think I'd want to see austerity beginning in government, deal with the SOEs, and deal with unemployment. If I could hear about those three, and maybe as a fourth one, just an honest reflection of where we are, not a history lesson, not a wish list, but just reflect. There's disunity in the party. Things have gone wrong in the country. And to be candid with us.
It's interesting. As you're talking, I'm thinking, I actually don't care what he does, as long as he does. I don't care what decisions he makes, as long as he makes decisions. Just do something. Don't let it. We can't just evolve. Unfortunately, we are out of time. It is 8:57. Luba Mayekisa, thank you as always.